Well, sometimes they have to kill us. They have to kill us. Because they can't break our spirit.
Look, I don't have to do this.
You don't have any choice.
I'm trying to help you people. Now, why won't you accept that?
It's in our DNA. You have to do what old man says.
What makes you such a threat?
We choose the right to be who we are. We know the difference between the reality of freedom and the illusion of freedom. There's a way to live with Earth and a way not to live with Earth. We choose the way of Earth. It's about power, Ray.
You have been led by the Spirit to Prophecy Keepers Radio, a cooperative service of the White Roots of Peace Council. Whether it be the modern Asaga of Peru, the current Kahunas of Hawaii, today's medicine people of the Americas, the Holy Ones of Africa, shamans of the East, North, West, and South, or the present-day Atawehis of the Cherokee, we bring you the traditional elders and teachers of our modern times and their confidants from the Americas, the steppes of Asia, the Holy Land, the islands of the sea, Africa, and Australasia. We have not been conquered, and we defy the established order. This is Will Bluewater, the host of Prophecy Keepers Radio, speaking on behalf of the White Roots of Peace Council.
It's the 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's the 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's the 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow?
Friends, this is your co-host, Will Bluewater. Join us now to learn how to legally worship using indigenous earth-based healing and empowering ceremonies. Aho. As Bluewater, seventh great-grandson of Old Tassel, first beloved man of the Cherokee, I'm remembering what Old Tassel said to the prevailing culture. Many proposals have been made to us to adopt your laws, your religion, your manners, and your customs. We have done so. Now it is time for our cultures to accept Old Tassel's ways and assisting us to walk in harmony with Mother Earth and Father Sky. Aho.
Grandfather, teach me the ways of the old, so that I may remember who I am.
OCO, again, Lee, this is Will Bluewater, and this is Prophecy Keepers Radio. Looks like all alone right now, Carolina Putnam, our regularly scheduled guest, is traveling and maybe calling in later. And we were going to try to get Joy Graves on the phone. She's probably busy. She knew what was going on, but something's got her detained. Anyway, until get someone to call in, I thought I'd replay Hopi Cry of the Earth. And it'll run down to right about past the hour. And that'll give us an hour with our guest if she should call in. Here it is.
Thank you for coming here this evening to me as one of the interpreters since 1948. the fulfillment of our ancestors and the leaders in 1948, 80, 900 years old, who had firm belief that someday we as human beings, children as mothers, will come together like this. And that said, they said that there'd be a house of Micah standing on eastern land someday. That means foreign government come on our land, put our house on our land, talk about human rights, equality, and justice, but has never opened the door to the native people in this land. So they told us to knock on doors 4 times we have to. That's a final number. So last December, I knocked on the door. And I was very happy that members of the United Nations and other individuals, organizations, and help us to bring this to fulfillment. So I'm very happy to be here to see it. I'm very happy to see you people who are here today have been chosen by Great Spirit to bring this message to the brothers and sisters from across the country and who have means to correct, change, and stop this wrongdoing we're talking about today so that this will not happen in the future, but begin to purify our land for our children that come after us. And I'm very happy that Keshe Shima, who was a firekeeper and member of that Yakima, who was a peaceful man, nonviolent man, and he wanted to be Hopi, he wanted to speak his language, he wanted to live like Hopi way, teach his own children Hopi way, and his son was keeper of his own tablet that he had. And now, Keshe Shima is a custodian of the sacred stone tablets, but he's kept in the Fire Clan Society. And I'm very happy that others were here, member of the Kachina Society, and I'm very happy that it would be hard to find somebody to speak at the United Nations or House of Micah when time comes. And I'm very happy that these men were willing to come and willing to volunteer to bring this message, and I will only interpret the message, but I will have something to say tomorrow. Thank you very much. The interpreter mentioned our name here, and of course, my people call me Martin Keshe Shima. And we are here today to bring some of our known prophecies that Hopi knew about. And we came from Hopi land to bring this message to you in this assembly today. We will give you a few of our prophecies as known so that when you hear them, we may begin to start working for the betterment of all human beings on this earth in the future. We came somewhere referred to underworld where life was like this, but life becomes so corrupt, greedy, and everything went wrong, turned away from the law of Great Spirit. So we, who remember some of these things, ask someone for permission to come to this new land and life. We know there was someone here. So after his receiving, he...
Hey, folks. Joy is with us. And Joy's going to fill us in what may have happened the last couple of weeks since we spoke to her. How are you doing tonight, Joy?
Fighting off sickness, but, you know, same old, same old. That's what happens in Oregon. It rains a lot here.
Yeah, yeah. I remember I lived in Portland, and my first wife was from there, and my son was born in Portland. And back in 85, matter of fact, yesterday was his 31st birthday. I remember he was due on her birthday, which is the 3rd of November, and we went in for a check, and because she had gestational diabetes, and he was starting to have problems breathing, so they said, hey, you know, we're taking him today. So we walked in for a checkup and walked out with a baby. I remember they took him by cesarean, and they just cleaned him up, swaddled him, and handed him to me, and I just stuffed him under my left arm and walked out, got on the phone, and called my parents, and I said, hey, you know, I said, I got this little football under my, I used to call him my little football. And it was so strange. The doctor says he was very, very vigorous kid. He came out just kicking and not particularly hollering, but he was just really kicking. He's a sweet guy. I'm expecting, now that he's 30, I'm expecting the creator might get a hold of him. And he's a firstborn son, 30 years old, and that's the time to start ministry if you're gonna. And I haven't pushed it with him. Matter of fact, I've never really pushed it with him. You know, we lived on a private 80-acre reservation on a kind of a mountaintop in Missouri. And he wouldn't go in for OC, you know, ceremony. And finally I talked to him. I said, look, well, would you go in if I didn't go in? Oh, okay, no problem. And afterwards, the chief and the medicine man, they both came up. Joe didn't say anything, but they both came up to me and said, hey. And they were just, I could tell something happened because they were a little pale. And they said, you wouldn't believe what happened. We were in there, and we asked Joe to pray, and he started praying. And he says his face became luminous. Scared him. Wow. So I remember, oh, my God, because, you know, they were thinking, hey, the pale one, you know. And anyway, we'll see what happens with my Joe. So what's going on your end of things, and with the church, anything new?
Oh, you know, no news as usual. I mean, as far as, like, my injunction, for example, you know, we're trying to retrieve a hard copy of it so we can review it. Might end up having to go ahead and just file it. We do have a church member here in state that might be willing to jump in and help us with it. But we've got to wait until we can get the hard text to see where it's at, make sure everything's written right this time. Hopefully we'll get that done here in the next week or so. I sent out word to James earlier today asking if he would help me try to get that. I was talking to Sergio a little bit about it. Let's see, the Sonoma case is about done as far as I'm hearing.
Good.
They're going to end up losing the land. I don't know if they're taking the land, but the church is being evicted off of the land. Probably will happen in December. But that's supposed to be being finalized this week, yeah. I haven't gotten a chance to get a hold of Scott to see, you know, what he has to say on it. But there's apparently some other cases going on down in Central California, very near to my other branch down there, Wahoo Boyet. Apparently... the county encompassing Chico has been sending out letters to ONAC churches, basically trying to pull the same thing that they're doing with Sonoma, which is, you know, they want to come in and do code violation checks and stuff. Plants have been stolen off of several church sanctuaries down there. The county has actually gone so far as to cut water mains to stop their ability to have water flow on the land, which is just beyond, you know. Apparently, one of the city council members, it was an informal council meeting is what I'm being told, but apparently one of the council members went so bold as to state that he questioned Ogallala's sincerity of religion and spirituality, and ultimately that he's, I guess, on behalf of the council, they're saying that they're not going to honor Aqaba Church members or the rites or our practices of ceremonies and whatnot down there. So they're trying to get that dealt with going on. I don't know how many at this point have received letters, but I'm told in the Chico area there's been probably close to at least a half a dozen letters. So hopefully we can get this turned around a little bit. I know there's also work going on with the case in Toledo, Ohio with Dr. Charmaine Bassett. She was on your show a few years ago, really good naturopath. I'm not all that certain of what's going on with her in Lucas County, but there is something going on in the Sixth Appellate Court. She's filed an appeal, and they've apparently accepted that. And so I'm waiting to get word on that. and I spoke with Roger Christie just probably 10 minutes or so ago. Apparently when Shar had to self-surrender to the federal government for prison over in Phoenix, he ended up in the hospital that day. And I'm not sure what the extent of what diagnosis or whatnot, but he told me that just today he was able to finally set aside the walker and walk on his own. So I would like to ask for prayers to go out for Roger.
Wow.
For good health, you know. He's 67. He's going through a lot, and it's just amazing to me. You know, he did his 50 months, and he's on the supervised crap. What a lot of people don't realize is Shar actually has spent 6 years now on a supervised release from the court. She's now going, she's went in on the 11th of October for 27-month prison sentence, and then she will be facing after that another 3 years supervised probation. We do have some attorneys in Alaska that are working really close with Shar and Roger, and they're just doing amazing. They've filed some sort of an appeal, and so apparently, let's see if I can find my note here. There's Justice Sotomayor received the appeal request from them, and he forwarded it over to Justice Kennedy. And ultimately, the U.S. Supreme Court has granted a 30-day extension to Shar to have her case reconsidered at the U.S. Supreme Court level. So hopefully we'll get
wow.
somewhere there, being it's a religious case and stuff. I'm hoping, we're all kind of hoping that they're going to, the Supreme Court will honor religious rights. So we're hoping, you know, these attorneys in Alaska are really good. They're really, they know what they're doing, unlike the attorneys we've had up till this point. So, of course, we are going to have to be looking at compensating them for their efforts. So, you know, just want to kind of remind, you know, church members listening that when you fight for preservation of rights and freedoms, even as a church, it costs us money to do. And so I think in total we're looking at around $10,000 that's owed on Shar's case. But they're doing the work, and they're doing it effectively. They're very clear and coherent, very intelligent when it comes to you know, formatting these court documents, and we've really got our fingers crossed in the hopes that that's going to work.
Wow.
But in the meantime, I'm hoping, you know, I know Shar went in really concerned about Roger. I know they just spoke about an hour ago on the phone, which is a really positive thing for both of them. They really need each other now more than ever, and they need the community support. So I'm hoping that we'll consider a Christmas card or a postcard or, you know, something to be sent out to Shar so she's not forgotten, because mail call is the only excitable thing that they that the inmates really have to look forward to. Our church branch does a lot of inmate outreach and that kind of thing. We also are supporters of the Human Solutions 420 POW, which also work really close with inmates especially in Shar's situation where we have no victim to a crime. So her SID number is 99280-022, and she is at the Federal Correction Facility at Phoenix Satellite Camp. The address is 37930 North 45th Avenue, and that's in Phoenix, Arizona. And the zip code is 85086. So
great.
Keep her in your thoughts and your prayers. Like I said, even a postcard makes all the difference when you're in a cage and just being mentally tormented, especially over something as senseless as using a plant that's going to heal people. So, and send prayers out to Roger. And, you know, maybe putting a little heat under the U.S. Supreme Court. We seem to have got Justice Kennedy's attention to this. So now it's just a matter of convincing him that the right thing to do is to honor religious rights, religious freedoms, respect our rights as human beings connected to the earth, and push for Shar and others like her that are in prison cells across the country right now for victimless crimes over using a medicine plant that's harmless. And hopefully we can, you know, get her out and get the others out and get this government functioning and respecting our rights the way that they're supposed to. So,
amen.
Once I think about all I can
think it's right now. It's really interesting. After 80 years of amnesia, you know, the American public has come a long way, and it's made it really clear that the vast majority of us are against prohibition. But, you know, the sad thing is, I was just watching 60 Minutes, and they were talking about the huge grow operations that are going on in Pueblo. And Pueblo County's trying to get that shut down. And they interviewed a doctor in the hospital, you know, concerning the number of teenagers that are coming in with problems, you know, overdose, and a lot of babies being born. You know, the flip side of the coin about it being sacred and being medicine is that, you know, the Bible says it's supposed to be used with judgment and skill, and the public has little judgment and little skill, and it's causing problems. So,
if anybody in Oregon, in Oregon, they're hiring people and they're saying you don't have to know anything about the plant or anything, and they'll start you off at $10,000 a month to drive around and be a garden cop. And it's like, really, when they don't have to know anything about the plant?
$10,000 a month to do what?
To drive around and police people that are growing under the recreational commercial grows, basically, here on
Oregon. Oh, really? Oh, to be a
$10,000
a month, and you don't have to know anything about it, huh? Wow.
Yeah. No experience necessary, no knowledge about cannabis necessary, no knowledge about agriculture. I mean, that's what I keep telling everybody here. You know, it's like, why is the liquor control regulating and governing over this plant here in Oregon? You know, they don't go out and do this to the wineries or the hop fields. They deal with the finished product. And if we're dealing with cannabis alcohol, like hemp beer or something like that, then by all means, let the OLCC regulate it. But as far as agricultural issues, they don't know what they're talking about. They don't know what they're doing because it's out of their scope. And yet that's why we're having the disasters here that we're having. And that's kind of what's happening, I think, across the country. Everybody's just so quick to see how much money can be made that suddenly they're willing to overlook all the propaganda that they've been believing all these years about it being dangerous and all of this. They're admitting, well, yeah, that's not true, and we're going to go ahead and legalize it so we can exploit it. We don't know anything about it. We don't care to know anything about it. We just know we can get money out of it.
Yeah.
That's one of our main problems right now. And it's not just here in Oregon. It's cross-country. So.
And there was an article. I use Yahoo Mail, and there's I guess the algorithm has me pegged as a cannabis supporter. So the article came across Yahoo, well, what to do if your dog gets stoned.
the show's a real slack-eyed dog looking up at you. But you know, yeah, you know, gee whiz, can you imagine if a small dog got a hold of a human dose of, say, can of butter, or you know, it's just, oh my gosh, you know that. And
I have had that happen with dogs. It is not fun.
drinking bong water. Is it true? Is it true that a dog could get stoned off drinking bong water? I suppose.
I don't know. I would think the dog would probably
be sick.
I know I would.
That's pretty nasty, but you know, if a dog will drink antifreeze, you know, and some do and get killed, and they'll certainly drink anything that smells interesting or nasty. And
yeah,
I'm a cat.
I had a 180 pound pit bull Rottweiler cross, and he went into the grow room one day and he bit off the top of about four of the plants.
Here.
And I mean, he had only just maybe 3 inches worth of plant off of. He could not stand up, walk. He was peeing on himself. I mean, it was bad. I'd stand him up and he'd just fall right back down like Jell-O.
Really?
For 3 days. Yeah.
Even though it hadn't been decarboxylated, he still got eye?
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And I had just a couple months ago, I was down in California. I had stopped in a medical patient down there and had gotten a piece of candy from Steve D'Angelo at Harborside. And it was the strongest. I think it was like $45 for this little tiny piece of candy. And so I brought it home, and I thought, you know, that's just too expensive to eat. You know, I'm just going to kind of set it up on the counter and, you know, kind of display it a little bit for people to see what's going on with cannabis. And I left the house. I came back with the store and came back and walk in, and one of my St. Bernards is just staggering, just running into walls and running into furniture. And I'm kind of looking at her. I'm like, oh, what, you know, what's she get into? Frantically, I'm looking around the house, and then she just had fallen to the ground. So I rush over to her, and I'm like, you know, trying to figure out what's wrong with her. It looked like she was dying to me. I thought, oh, my God, what has she gotten into? Well, it took me a few minutes, and I thought, did you eat that candy? she kind of hung her head a little bit, and I was like, oh, you bitch. I went over and made sure shit, that candy was gone. That wrapper was on my bed. I was like, you're fucking stoned.
Oh, jeez. Oh, man.
Yeah. So, yeah. But it is beneficial. I mean, I was working with the veterinarian up in Washington for a while, and she was making CBD medicines for dogs. And one of the medicines that she had made was a topical, which I've used it a few times. I didn't really think too much of it personally. But she used this topical ointment on a dog that had a broken leg.
Wow.
And
oh, yeah.
What they had found is that bone actually healed back stronger than it was before the dog broke its leg with the CBD-based medicine. So that blew my mind.
That's right.
And I've heard a lot of success stories on pain and arthritis type conditions as well as tumors. You know, cannabis works really well with animal horses too, believe it or not.
Wow.
So, yeah, I mean, that's what Jack was saying. You know, there's a million directions we can go with this plant. And then whatever direction we go, there's a million things you can do that this plant can do, you know. So there's room. That's what frustrates me about this community is, you know, everybody's just jumping into the cannabis business and then trying to corner the market and then trying to eliminate competition when, you know, it's just senseless to do. There's just so many things. I wish we could get some unity. I know that this is the plant of unity, so I'm hoping that we're going to get this turned around. But we've got a lot of uphill to go, and you know the government could have rescheduled. They didn't. I think that was kind of surprising they didn't, but I think there's a reason they didn't, and I don't trust them.
No.
So while we've got four states looking at medical laws right now, but we've got 20 that are going for a rec. So you know it's taken us this long to get cannabis where it's now being talked about publicly, you know, and we've been shoving down all of these medical, you know, tests and proof and patients that are healed. And now all of a sudden, well, look how much money we can get. We're not interested in the sick people anymore. We're not interested. We just
yeah.
want to know how can we make money. And that's going to be our big obstacle for a long time. And I'm sure once we finally get everything settled with cannabis, what plant next?
Yeah.
Is it going to be? You know,
well, look, so. our guest has called in. Thank you. You know, you're welcome to hang up or hang up, and but appreciate you coming on the program.
No problem. I'm happy
okay.
to be here. Anytime.
All right, you bet. Well,
all right.
Carolina, it's going to be an interesting guest. Your mic's live right now, Carolina. She's I met her in Nauvoo at the. On the Ancestors of Ancient America conference. How are you doing, Carolina?
Doing well. Thank you so much. And just got back from the jungle, actually, today.
From where?
I just walked in from, like, a four-hour hike from in the jungle today and a four-hour drive after that.
Yeah, what jungle? Where are you?
I'm in Peru, and I was right near the Manu National Reserve on we have a friend's land out there called the Paititi Institute, and I was out there at their eco village.
Wow. Well, apologize. Mark isn't with us. I must have had a problem tonight, and, normally he would have done a mind reading, but, well, tell, go ahead. We've got as much time as you want, and go ahead and tell folks who you are and what you do.
Are you hearing my signal well?
Yep, hear you really well.
Okay. All right. So my name is Carolina Putnam, and I'm originally from Louisiana in the U.S. And I've been living in Peru for the past 4.5 years. With my partner of the Caro Nation. And throughout this time, I've been traveling around the world with my father-in-law, who is a ceremonial maestro, a ceremonial leader of the Caro Nation. And we've gone to the U.S., and we've gone to Bolivia and to India and South Korea on behalf of sharing indigenous wisdom. And my particular interest is sharing how we can utilize indigenous insights to empower our daily lives, whether we're on the computer, whether at work, whether we're at home or in the garden, or from the choices that we make with food and how we communicate with each other. And so this work has culminated to an organization that we call Revivalution, which, again, the aim is to bring indigenous wisdom forward into the modern world as a practical and viable solution for everybody and for the sustainability of the planet. And we often hold retreats here in Peru, where we invite individuals from around the world to come and enjoy 2 weeks of a pilgrimage from the Sacred Valley to Island of the Moon and Island of the Sun in Bolivia. Going through different indigenous communities that we are connected with and doing our best to offer an authentic experience that we feel can empower people's daily lives. And when we're not on a retreat here, we're usually around, you know, joining in the U.S. We went to the Eagle Quetzalcóndor gathering, and this year, I went to the U.S., by myself this time to be able to have a bit more time to sit and connect with people more intimately. And that is where I got to see you in Illinois, where we were in the middle of GMO corn land, where the pipeline is coming out of the other end and trying to go under the river. And I know Susan is coming on here soon, which I'm really happy to hear about. And we've lived here in Peru most of the time, and for me, one of my major, primary interests is that I live and work with a nation that literally just came down the mountain about 25 years ago.
Wow.
And so the it's really interesting because we see some of the same patterns, of course, happening all around humanity, including the mining and including pipelines here. They're building at the simultaneously while they're building this pipeline in North America. They're also right in the mountain range, right above our home, are building the largest natural gas pipeline in South America. And what's interesting, though, is there we're on a different step of the rung here, in which the news and marketing and propaganda that's on the radios and that are on the TVs here are soap operas, are, you know, gadgets about becoming more modern and, you know, these type of, which we all have. But there's not, I haven't particularly really seen, you know, a big movement for saving waters and for informing the people of what these things mean. I think that the word water privatization is still so foreign here. Like, it's a word, just as the word cancer. It's like a foreign idea here. It exists, in especially where the cities are populated, but the concept of what that word means is still not triggering an image or understanding. And so when we're speaking about mining and we're speaking about land rights and seed sovereignty and water sovereignty here in the area where I'm particularly located, I'm just noticing that there's still this really big gap in information. And so I'm here in Peru and observing and doing my best to make the best decisions that I can on a daily basis in my life to ensure that I'm not supporting large companies. And can you still hear me? I just got an error message.
Yeah.
Oh, we're doing
Hello?
Fine. Loud and clear.
Okay, perfect. Skype just gave me an error message. Okay, so I'm just doing my best to ensure that the decisions that I make on a daily basis, as well as the people that I bring into retreats, really show a high integrity of what it means to be human and alive at this time. And then all the while, you know, having these conversations with my family and trying to have these conversations with more members in the community. And it's interesting, though, because there's still so much fragmentation that happened as modernity hit these communities or as they were introduced to one another. And there's not really this understanding. Like, the community that I work with, the first road is being built, which means
wow.
The first electricity, first beer, first video games, first internet,
yeah.
All of that is like not so on the horizon. And to the community members, that means, oh, wait, we get to get to the city easier. We can bring our kids down for better schooling, quote unquote, for, you know, a better education and opportunities and work. And what that really means on the underlines is, you know, we're talking about companies building roads, because I would have a hard time imagining that states are building roads out to the mountains. So it's just interesting in seeing here, witnessing like what's going on in Standing Rock and around the world with different protests and different people coming together as a result of a project that has already begun, and seeing the other end of the rung and where the consciousness is before, as projects are building up. You know, and seeing the childlike ignorance around that, and as well, still, I think the question for all of us is, what is it that we can exactly do to create significant change and effective change? And so those are still questions that I'm pondering here and often clearly praying about. And just kind of in awe watching that. I know that I've heard this prophecy of the black and white snake meeting from North and South America and causing a great bit of upheaval, and then just seeing the connection between the pipelines that are being built.
Mm-hmm.
And Yeah, so just today as we came out of the jungle, we rode over the tail of the pipeline being built here, and I was just offering my prayers. And yes, I noticed that the protests that go on here in Peru for, you know, seed sovereignty, for GMO, and for saving the waters happen in the big cities. And I'm wondering, you know, how we can continue to bridge the gap between awareness so that a movement of human rights, a movement of land rights, of Mother Nature rights, all meet in the middle without any nations and communities being left behind in the meantime or repeating cycles. And so how we could, spread the message in an effective way of what's going on up north and seeing results so that we can empower other communities as well to stand in good timing.
Absolutely.
Oh, that's
absolutely.
That's, yeah, Joy, feel free to jump in, Joy.
That's exactly what I think that the focus of Aqaba is gearing toward right now, is the unification. We need to bring all of our brothers and sisters as human beings across this planet together and take the stand in solidarity and say, you know, we have these rights. The earth is our mother. We are connected to the earth. And, you know, we as the human beings, we're not going to tolerate disrespect or dishonor. We're not going to let you rape and plumage and just not just a North American thing. You're absolutely right. This is a global issue. Water is life for all life on the earth. And if they frack and they toxify it here in North America, they're doing the same thing. It's going to affect everywhere else in the world the same way, because it's all one earth and we're all connected. Bless your heart, sister, for doing what you're doing. You are totally doing an honorable path, and I give you, you know, abundance of support and faith and respect. Thank you for what you're doing down there, and thank you for coming and sharing it with the Aqaba Radio and expressing, because that's exactly what we're trying to get the world to realize. Aqaba Native American Church is not about blood quantum. It's not about tribe. It's not about race. It's not about sex, color, any of this. It's about our rights as human beings to the earth. And if we don't, as human beings, start to defend these things, all life, especially the life that cannot fend for itself or speak for itself, such as animals, plants, minerals, all of it is going to suffer. So bless you for what you're doing, sister. Bless you so much.
And she's a very effective speaker. She's I don't know. She has the sweetest spirit. But you know, she's kind of typical of a lot of women folk that were reared in Louisiana. Very sweet people. My first wife and I traveled all over the Southeast when I was doing natural gas pipeline safety work, and the people that she loved the most were the people from Louisiana. And I've got a lot of family down there too, and my mom's brother and his family and extended family live in Lafayette, and New Orleans.
Awesome. She's over there in Peru, and I think that it's even more awesome that she is seeing.
Oh,
that
yeah.
These pipelines are not just a North American issue. And if we let them get away with it here, then they're just going to do it there. They're just going to go to Africa next or go, you know, they're not going to stop until we stop them. And, you know, a lot of people, they think that when they hear the pipeline, they think it's all just an American issue. It's not. It's a world issue. Canada chimes in every once in a while because we know those pipelines are running in Canada. But a lot of people don't know that there are, in places like Peru, the same kind of destructive habits going on. And so, again, especially a Louisiana girl, bless you so much for going over to Peru and being a witness to this and for bringing it to the world's attention and for taking the stand for what's right and saying, no, you guys got to stop this.
That's right.
Well, one of the things that I find is potentially would be beneficial for an effective action is that, you know, having the opportunity to be here in Peru, I still have Skype, but but can somewhat like disconnect myself and create, you know, create a life that I feel is abundant and respectful to my own body as well as to the earth. And so in terms of, you know, for instance, I use a ProPure water tank here. So even though I live in Peru, there's still chemicals being used and sold here. There's like a, actually like kind of blowing up right now. Actually, most, you may go to the market here, but most of the most of the food there is inorganic and it's using lots of chemicals. And so that runs in our water system as well. And so for me, what I've decided, I came to a point where I'm like, okay, I'm talking about global change. Now, what can I change in my own life? And I immediately went to food and water. So I can make the decision to A, grow my food, or B, support a local organic farmer. And the reason why that's connected to these issues of the pipeline and these issues of like global systems is that the way that we purchase is the fuel and funding for large organizations and corporations. And so we literally, more than our political vote, our vote, every time we use a dollar, a cent, every time we vote for what type of action we want in the world. So when I'm buying pristine bottled water, I'm voting for a company to please go into Mount Shasta or please go into the last of an indigenous community and take that water and bottle it up and sell it to me for like $7 or something. And, or I'm making a decision now, and which would be really nice to see if this was connected to, you know, the larger movements going up there, but having these water companies like Berkey and ProPure, which have really incredible systems at a rate that everybody can collaborate to make sure that they have those in their house. And then there's the more really expensive systems as well that are also, but being able to use our own water sources locally and to be able to purify those, then we're taking action in our own life to like stop the expansion of those movements. And the same with our food. Whenever I'm like going to the market and I'm voting for non-organic food, of course, it's less expensive at that time. But the minute that we all make that shift and just as much as we can in our daily life start making that shift, then the demand changes. The demand changes and we become self-empowered. And we become empowered individuals that can have the right over our own bodies and the rights over the decisions that we interact with around the world. Because food is one of our most direct relations, not only to the earth, but also to our global interactions, because a lot of it's being imported and exported. And so what I find that would be very empowering is if we continue to unravel ways to connect the sustainability movement to these actions that we're taking. It's incredible to see so many tribes and of all nations and colors and everybody coming together for a central cause, which is the river of life. It's water, it's our life force. And for us to be able to potentially have campaigns there or sharing daily actions that people can take in their home life, I think is going to be one of the most empowering steps that we can take on the planet to truly like implement a very tangible action without, you know, beyond going through the courts, which we need to go from all angles. And I really appreciate the support that everybody brings in all their angles. And one of the angles that I'm really passionate about is that daily life action that we can bring. And so, I would love to see if those companies would support somehow, and like ProPure and Berkey, and see people coming up with really ingenious solutions to continue voting for the pipeline through daily action.
Yeah.
Absolutely. You got to set the example. Well, I don't know if, I don't know how long I bet you're tired. If you need to go, you know, we can go. But
Does she have a website or something, or?
Huh?
Does she have like a website or something where she promotes?
Oh yeah, Caroline, do you have a website or? Yeah, tell us about how we can.
Thanks for saying that. I often think about that part. So I do have a website. It's called revivolution.net. That's just revivolution.net. And this is where we're always, of course, working to put more information up there in between sitting down with coca leaves and potatoes and sitting down with people in the community. Try to get some things on the internet as well. And yeah, this is the focus there on that website is exactly that. Like how can we can continue to bring daily practices into our life that are self-empowering, that Indigenous nations have a very good ancestral memory of and seem to be recuperating, as well as people around the world. And so I want to continue empowering people around the world to remember our deep ancestral insights of what it means to be human and alive and connected to the earth.
Wonderful. Awesome.
Well, we'll get that link up so people can visit the page right from the program.
There you go. Yeah.
Well, appreciate you coming on, Carolina. Keep in touch. And
let you mind if I say a prayer?
Sure, go ahead.
Okay. So I'm just going to say a prayer in an Andean way, and I'll do my best to keep it in English. Pachamama, Ipamama, Taita Inti, Taita Waida, calling to Mother Earth, Father Sun, and Father Sky, calling to the mountains, Apukuna, Pita Shirai, Sawa Sirai, Kumawanka, Yawar Maki, Apuchiko, and Pita Shirai. Waka Wilki, Veronica, Kumawanka, Yawar Maki, Apuchikom, Apu Ausangate, Hatun Pata, Lara Pata, Waman Lipa, Hampui, 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 Hampui. Sending in beautiful, loving prayers today from the Andes, all over the world, to your both of your hearts, and to all who are listening, to the sacred waters that flow all around the world, bringing in beauty, harmony, and life force. And sending in the beautiful vibrations here from the Andes, and to all of our brothers and sisters at Standing Rock, and all those standing for life and purpose around the world. May we all continue to work and live in service. May our actions follow that service, our hearts and our minds. Giving thanks to all of the elements that keep us alive each day. May we continue to remember to give them offerings so that they too have more and more life force to continue rebalancing and allowing us to stay in this living interaction with life itself. May each and every one of us, all nations, all peoples, individuals all around the world have all the resources, love, happiness, compassion, all that we need in this lifetime to fulfill our highest service and the highest and purest intention of the architect of everything. Muchas gracias.
Amen. Amen. Just got word. Susan Stanton is going to call in here in about 5 minutes. And we'll look forward to that. But, if you need to run, go ahead and ring off. But
I'm good. I'm not in a hurry.
Looking forward to hearing from matter of fact, while we're waiting for her, let's listen to a little cool music. How about Atlantis by Donovan? We'll be back in 5 minutes.
The continent of Atlantis was an island which lay before the great flood in the area we now call the Atlantic Ocean. So great an area of land that from her western shores those beautiful sailors journeyed to the south and the North Americas with ease in their ships with painted sails. To the east, Africa was her neighbor, across a short strait of 3 miles. The great Egyptian age is but a remnant of the Atlantean culture. the antediluvian kings colonized the world. All the gods who play in the mythological dramas, in all legends from all lands, were from fair Atlantis. Knowing her fate, Atlantis sent out ships to all corners of the earth. On board were the 12. The poet, the physician, the farmer, the scientist, the magician, and the other so-called gods of our legends, though gods they were. And as the elders of our time choose to remain blind, let us rejoice and let us sing and dance and ring in the new. Hail Atlantis!
Our guest, Susan Stanton, is on the line. How are you doing, Susan?
I am well, and how are you?
Oh, I'm doing fine, I gotta apologize. I chickened out. I didn't tell you I was going to have to leave, but because I felt really bad.
That was the first thing I was going to do was jump all over you.
Well, John and I both had the same problem.
Hola, Susan.
I've got
hi,
hey. I've got life-threatening sleep apnea, and if I don't get good quality sleep, and you know, I'm getting old, and I'm used to, you know, certain kind of bed. Every day I could feel myself, and this has happened before. I could feel myself getting. Matter of fact, when I got home, I pretty much had to stay in bed for a couple of days. I was just exhausted. And
and I was worried about you. I was truly, you know, I was worried about you, and I was just so insanely, you know, busy. But
that's okay.
My slides
no
were there. Brad enjoyed what little time he got with you. He really enjoyed that. So
oh yeah,
we knew
I
you
spent
were
a lot
there
of time
somewhere.
With John.
You were like the aliens. We knew you were there. We just didn't see a lot of you, you know, because I was running so fast. But
John and I were just kind of inseparable, and I think my cat's trying to step on my keyboard. Zippy,
uh-oh.
Don't step on the computer.
Anyway,
there's a certain spot he likes on the bed, and it's the corner closest to the cat door and the bedroom door, and so he's plotting on leaving. So What's happened since I saw you in August? What do you got
to
report?
Well, you know, I do want to just say how much I loved listening to Caroline. And Caroline has had a really huge impact on my life. And I can never thank her enough for the things that she helped me with getting into that conference, but also the things that she helped me with in being able to understand more about the time that we're living in. And so using that as my segue in the door, after the conference, I was really excited because I thought, oh, the universe will now give me this great vacation and I can just kick back. And it's been like having a kangaroo in the living room with boxing gloves, you know, and every time you try to sit on the couch, he gets you. And so it's not been a slowdown at all, not a moment, I swear. But so I guess the biggest thing began while the conference was on. And we didn't realize this. I didn't know that right across the river, there were two people camping out directly in a straight arrow line across from where we were. And Frank was one of them. He's a former Catholic priest. And Jessica Resnick, who's his partner, was there. And they are Catholic workers from Des Moines. And they are just the most amazing people. And after you guys left, I one day just picked up the newspaper from Burlington, I guess, or Quincy, and read about how this young woman had been arrested. And I thought, well, that's weird. That's right here. Why didn't I know about that? So I shot over there and met them, and they were just two people alone at the foot of this steep embankment on the edge of the Mississippi River. And they were protesting all by themselves. I think they only had one sign at that time. So we went into their little screen tent and sat there. And I just was in awe of everything that was going on. I could not believe it. And they started filling us in. And I don't know if you remember this, but leaving where we were and going down the river a couple of miles, there was a bridge. There were actually two that were under construction. Repair. But the one closest to our side, the Nauvoo side, had the inside was two lanes. It had the right-hand lane away from the river. It was blocked off. Well, I was asking Brad, and he said that whole bridge was like 100 feet long, maybe. It was under construction for weeks, resurfacing one lane. So that became really interesting to me, and I would go down there and take pictures and videos, and there were these crews of men, like 20 men at one time, and you'd go down there at night, and they'd all be working, and these huge spotlights, and this sounding thing, you know, on the bridge. And it became evident, even to somebody as totally oblivious as me, that there was more there than met the eye. And that's when I realized, because I had been hearing about the boring. Actually, on the internet, it said it was in some place called Montgomery County. I don't even know where that is. We're Lee County on the Iowa side and Hancock on the Illinois side. And that's what they were doing. They were boring under the river. And this was going on during our conference.
Wow.
And had I known that, I think we would have been downstream instead of upstream.
Yeah.
Because this is crazy. But you know what? Things happen the way they do for a reason. So I became involved. They asked us to do a water ceremony. So Karen Sparrow, another grandmother on the Iowa side, and I began to do water ceremonies right there on a little gravel turnoff by the blue port-a-john. That was very romantic. Port-a-John, but on the river and the railroad track. So we'd be in the midst of our ceremony and the train would go by. But as time went by, it got more and more and more and more active. And pretty soon there were probably 60 people full-time camping in that ditch along the road. And it would swell up to 200, 300, or 400 on the weekend. And it got wilder and wilder, and Jessica climbed under a huge truck and handcuffed herself under the truck.
Oh.
And the kids were handcuffing themselves to barrels. And, you know, this is like not for the faint of heart or / grandmothers.
Yeah.
Because I was just going, codependent grandmothers too. I'm just running around. I'm so worried for my kids. But you know what? We all learned. We all woke up. And I just have in such awe of this generation like Caroline, who are stepping so far out of the box that it doesn't even exist anymore. You know, I mean, I still remember the transistor radio, you know. I still remember Red Skelton, you know. I was thinking about that earlier. The stuff I remember Mr. Ed. You know, that was like big stuff to
yep.
me. And here are these kids, and they're just out there. And so, you know, the Standing Rock youth, I don't remember this, they had come through at the end of July across the river, and when they were coming through, we took care of them and housed them and fed them, and the next morning they were having prayers on the water by the river and found out that the Army Corps of Engineers had approved the flow of oil through Iowa and into Illinois, and that was devastating. At the end of their prayers, they started out running again, and they gifted my husband a Chinupa. And so we used that Chinupa to open our conference with you there. And then we have since used that over and over again to do prayers with the protesters. So this has been a huge thing. We were there one day, and you know, I got to tell you this, I am a child of the 60s. And I actually do remember it. And I did go to Woodstock. And I could never get arrested as a protester or a wild child. I kept trying, but things just, you know, the universe conspired. So we were over here at the camp one day, and the sheriff came, and he was passing out eviction notices that everybody had to take their tents down and leave. And so he would hand the notice to somebody and ask for their first and last name, and they wouldn't give it to him. And so finally, in frustration, he said, "Is no one going to give me their first and last name?" And I jumped up and I said, "I will, I will." And he just looked at me and he goes, "No, thanks." And I said, "What?" I was so shocked. And I said, "Am I too old? Why don't you want my name? I'm ready." And Brad's just like poking me, you know. It was terrible. So he never did take my name. But I'll tell you, we were right there with those kids. They were great.
Wow. They were great. You know, I was reading, and everybody's seen the final police smashing up and dispersing everybody. And the Huffington Post published an article about the acquitting of the militia people, the Bundy militia, on charges of conspiracy, and they made a note that those people took over federal land for the same reasons. They were carrying guns, had 20,000 rounds of ammunition, and they threatened to kill federal officers, and they were allowed to come and go as they pleased. No response, you know, and, you know, what's the difference? Huffington Post figured it out, you know.
Exactly.
I guess they're just cowards, you know.
That's when I grew up. I mean, I'm born in 1949. You'd think I'd be a grown up by now. I grew up the other day, and what had happened was, I was down there and going there. They had asked us now to please pray every day. So it's a 26-mile one-way trip there, and I was doing it. I'd go by and pick up Karen Sparrow, and then we'd go out because they had now moved the camp inland. And we were doing prayers there every morning. But, you know, the more you pray, the more the spirit shifts. And if we remember that there is no place in which there is no matter, even though it seems like we're standing out in a field, we're really in an ocean of energy. And so I realized one day that the energy had shifted. It was like standing in the water and a cold current blows through. And, yeah, it was creepy. And I started looking around to see what it was, and I realized that there was another faction, and there were people that had showed up that were wearing masks on their faces, and the security guards had changed. Like, for example, one of my favorite security guards was a guy from Jamaica, kind, really just loving and nice, and, you know, he just was really friendly. Well, suddenly he was gone, and nobody nice was there. And the security guards that were privately, you know, hired didn't make eye contact. And when, you know, it was just different. It was completely different. And I was trying to put my finger on it and figure out what it was that was going on. And people started coming into the camp that obviously had a different agenda. They were demanding to know who the landowner was, whose property we were on. Who is he? Why does he have security cameras? You know, and he'd had them for a long time. It wasn't recent. He's a wonderful man. And the reason that he opened a camp to the kids was because the pipeline, they wanted to buy his property and cross it. And they wanted to cross it right in the area where he has a memorial that he's built to his two children who died when they were really young. And he said, no, I don't care how much money you offer me, I'm not going to let you do that. So they said, that's all right, we'll get it by eminent domain. We'll take you to court. And he said, we'll do it. So they did. They took him to court, and, you know, it was a really big battle, and the pipeline lost, and he won. So when he heard about the kids, he said, come up and stay at my place. And he's just been the most amazing guy. Well, suddenly there were people there, and I'm going to call them goons because that's what they felt like. And they were demanding to know all this information, and they were, you know, it was just this weird feeling. So that's when it first seemed to turn. And there continued to be just this undercurrent that would come and go of negativity. And I began to realize that things were not as they appeared to be. All of a sudden, all the movies came back, like Silkwood. And I remember Matt Damon made a movie a few years ago about, I don't know if you saw that, but he was a fertilizer salesman or something, seed salesman or something like that. And,
oh, yeah.
And, you know, yeah, that was a powerful movie to me, and it never went anywhere because, you know, it was too truthful. But all of a sudden, it was all of that. It was just all of that. And I was just sitting there feeling like, you know, I don't know anything. I suddenly realized that I woke up and realized now that I know nothing. And all I know is that as a grandmother, my heart just wrapped around these kids, and I just wanted them to be safe. Now, by now, they're down along the river. No, they're down on Highway 61 because they found that there was a dumping site where as they're boring under the river, you know, at the so-called bridge repair on the Illinois side and going over to take it to Iowa, they had to get rid of the stuff that they're digging out. And it's toxic. And so they're dumping it in this quarry. Well, guess where the quarry was? It's on the Iowa side, 500 yards from Wayne May's property, which is what
wow.
We all know. Oh, my gosh, that was amazing. That was horrible. So I rushed over there to find out what was going on, and the kids were already in action. They pulled a U-Haul truck across there, then they pulled a big trailer, and, you know, they were protesting nicely, but again, you know, there was this other faction that came in, and they were like, it was getting really, I saw this anger, this antagonizing. But all this time, the whole world is looking at Standing Rock, and that's how it should be. We've got a huge fulfillment of prophecy going on up there. You know, the world is changing. All the four colors of the four directions are involved. You know, we've got on our grandmother's page, we have people from all over the world who are praying for you know, Standing Rock, and just so everybody's so engaged. But down here, this little group of kids have got this pipe threading under the river, affecting potentially 31 million people's drinking water. And not just the drinking water. The river goes, and what's going to go with it? The farm fields. You can't water corn with oil. And what does that mean? There goes our food. There goes all our containment pigs. You know, there goes all our whatever, whatever. You know, now I have to throw this other one in. I hope I'm not getting too wild here, but this is my rant. And I think I brought this up before.
Go for it.
We've got...
Go for it.
Oh, thank you. If I get too crazy, just blow the whistle and I'll...
Oh, no way.
Start singing a grandmother song. Okay. But across the river, and I know I mentioned this, is that fertilizer plant. And that fertilizer plant, nobody knew about till it was halfway up. And the thing is humongous, huge. It's the second biggest fertilizer plant in the world. And I know I mentioned on the show last time, Timothy McVeigh had, I think it was 4 55-gallon drums of the same stuff that they're producing when they are up and running at 1.5 million tons annually. And his 4 55 drums blew up the Oklahoma City office building. So the potential for damage, some first guys I met that worked on there were union electricians, and they told me there's a direct line from that plant into the Mississippi River. So there's another thing. So, okay, so here's the pipeline. Here's the fertilizer plant. And then the other day, a woman came to my house here. She's been a pipe fitter there for about 9 or 10 months, and her contract just finished. She was on her way home and stopped by my house, and she said, "Susan, I have to tell you this." She said, "You need to know that they have just approved the building of an ethanol plant next door to the fertilizer plant." So
that's just
perfect. Is that bizarre? So she had been keeping me updated all this time on what's going on in the fertilizer plant. As a pipe fitter, she said they had to rip out so many pipes because they'd been put in backwards, literally backwards. She said she'd never seen anything like it in her life. She said that they would come to work and there'd be notes inside the plant on the pipes, little sticky notes, threatening what was going to be done if that plant ever started up. I knew they'd had at least 4 bomb threats that we're aware of. But this was on the inside of the plant, people writing notes. She said to me the first time we really talked about this, she said, "You know, a project like this, graduation day is startup day when they flip the switch to begin the flow, you know, the engines running and stuff." And she said, "I can tell you that there is not one of us there who has any desire to be there on startup day. Not one employee." And she said, and this is thousands. They've had 10,000 employees working there. And she said, "What promised me," she said, "when you hear that they're going to start it, that you will leave." And I'm just sitting here thinking, you know what? This is not how I thought it was. This is not. So I looked at it. And if you draw a line, okay, this is a little scary, from the fertilizer plant and now the ethanol plant across the river and come up through my front yard and out my back door, you're less than 2 miles from the pipeline that crosses behind my house, the Beacon Dapple pipeline. It's not even 2 miles from here. So in a direct line of less than 15 miles, we have an ethanol plant, a huge fertilizer plant, the river, and the pipeline. And how close are we to the New Madrid Fault? And how many tornadoes do we have in our area? And how many bomb threats have we already had? And you know what? Who have worked their hearts out to try to bring the world's attention to this. And somebody's looking. You know, when I was a little kid, my dad used to get the New Yorker magazine. And I loved it because, you know, no TV, no, you know, video games. I loved it because it had cartoons. And so I would live for that once-a-month magazine. Well, the New York Times would advertise with a cartoon every month. So this one month, I remember this, and I've tried so hard to try to find it in archives, and I never have. But I remember vividly this cartoon. And it was rush hour in the New York subway, and everybody's standing there, you know, elbow to elbow, cheek to cheek. Everybody's reading the New York Times, you know, standing there holding the straps, holding the bars, sitting on the things. Everybody's reading a newspaper except for one man sitting quietly on the bench being swallowed alive by a boa constrictor.
Uh-huh.
And that's how I feel, you know. I look at my kids down there and I think, is anybody paying attention? Are we awake? What's happening here? And they're just doing it, and they're trying so hard. So anyway, the other night I got a text message at in the morning from one of the elders at the camp. And she said, you need to come now. And so I started, you know, listening, oh boy. So I started getting my things together. And as we were heading over there, I got a message from the organizer, please come now. So by the time we got there, they were starting to circle. And we got into this big circle. And that's when they said that the thing had been threaded through the boring drill line and was now on the Iowa side. It came across from Illinois. And the kids were crying. And it was just, it was heartbreaking, you know, and we just sat there in this big circle and thinking, and I shouldn't call them kids, you know, but I can't help it because they are to me. They're just so committed. And like Caroline was saying, you know, they get it why we shouldn't be buying plastic bottles of water, because we've changed the whole economics of survival on this planet just by doing that, you know. And here are these kids that were born awake, and one of the girls said to me, can I talk to you? And I said, yeah. And we went over and sat beside a tent, and she said, I feel like I don't know who I am anymore, and talking about what she should do and where the best place for her now would be to go. Should she go to Standing Rock? Should she go, you know? And I told her, I reminded her, and I don't know if she already had, but I said, when you get a minute, read a little thing called The Republic by Plato, and read about the children of gold and silver and copper and brass and their different roles in our society, and read about the guardians. Who are the guardians? And then what is their job? You know, what is their responsibility? They don't own a lot. That's the first thing that it says about them. They don't own a lot, you know, because I believe they already know that everything is theirs. This is their world. You know, that's why they can do this protection so beautifully and give it all, because they know this is their mother, you know. This is her skin. But I think the most important message is that when all is said and done, she's going to keep going. She'll be fine. It really isn't about her. We can't kill her. We can't. It's about us. Are we behaving well? Are we behaving badly? You know, it's all about that personal integrity and commitment that we're making one at a time in our own heart. That's what it is right now. We're down to the 100th monkey. You know, and with any luck, we'll be one of those, because it's, you know, it's so big that it's just, I don't know. So I hope I'm not depressing anybody.
Oh, no.
I can send cookies.
Well, it's been a real eye-opener to watch what's going on there. And they didn't get any coverage until the last couple of days, you know. Yeah, well, they...
It was a blackout.
Well, they did the right thing.
It was a total blackout.
You know, they remained as nonviolent as possible, and people do get mad, but, you know, there was injuries. There was, you know, stun grenades that were thrown at them, and there was kids that were injured with shrapnel, and just they're illegally flying aircraft too low, all kinds of dangerous stuff. And but well, we appreciate you calling in and giving us an update.
Oh no, can't get rid of me yet. Nope, I got to do one more thing. Don't get rid of me.
I didn't know. That's okay.
Okay.
I never know. That's the reason why I asked.
I got one more thing here. Well, you know how grandmothers are. We got to have the last
word,
right? Just ask any grandfather. Okay.
Sure.
So here's the deal. Because we got to end this on a good note, all right? So what are we doing about it? So here we are sitting in this big circle, and everybody's talking about dispersing. And you know, the grandma heart is breaking because I'm going to lose all my kids now, and they're going to be here and there and everywhere. And then Alex, our beloved Alex, says, well, basically, and I can't paraphrase, because I'll have to paraphrase, but it was basically something like, okay, so who's going to do something about this while we're gone? And I had just been given a lecture that morning by someone who said, Susan, you're doing too much. Don't do one more thing in your life. And I could still hear the words echoing as my right hand shot up into the air. And I said, I will do something. And he looked at me, and he's my grandson. He's laughing. Okay, what's that? And I started pointing around at all the grandmothers in the circle, and there are quite a few of us, we will get busy. And so here's what we're doing. We have begun contacting grandmothers, the 100 grannies up in Iowa City, and not just grannies, the Veterans for Peace up in Iowa City, they're in with us. We've got grandmothers up the river. We've got grandmothers as far up as Minnesota. We've got grandmothers down the river, all the way down to Quincy and down into St. Louis. We're just getting going. We're going to gather grandmothers and grandfathers, and we're going to do something very cool. We're going to become legal observers. We're going to become trained. Yes, we're going to become trained. We're going to get the vest and the hat. And we're going to get our steno pads because we all go back to that day, right, before all this other little electronic stuff. And we're going to get out there, and we're going to start writing down all the things that are happening because, you know what, I used to work in mining. And the biggest blight to the mining companies was when they were forced to go into reclamation. And you have to do certain things, and those certain things are what got you the ability to do your damage in the first place. So the pipeline has to be compliant with those things that, you know, were given to them and that they agreed upon. And so I will tell you, there will be grannies all over the place writing this down and looking to see that they're really doing what they're supposed to do. And as we put that word out, we're starting to get all kinds of response from grandmothers everywhere that want to do this, not just the pipeline. How about Susquehanna with the gasoline spills? How about Kansas, where the fracking caused the biggest earthquake we've had in our country? I mean, all of these things down there along the Biloxi coast, you know, all the things that have been done, and they still haven't completely done what they were supposed to do. That's part of our outcry that needs to be made. Okay, so we didn't stop them, but we can sure make them clean up their mess. Isn't that the grandma job? Isn't that
what
we're supposed to do?
That's right. That's
so
great.
So we're on it. So I want you to know that. We're on it. We're going to be advertising the date. I believe we're having our first gathering on November 5th. Same place, I think, where we were gathered the other day where you had an uncomfortable bed. Don't tell the grandmas.
Okay.
They're good. Grandmas are good at that. No, we're good. We're good. At least the chiggers are gone. There won't be any more chiggers. But that's our goal. We're going to pull together. We're going to get legal training. We've got a lawyer who's looking now to find us a really good. I know that there's different organizations. There's the National Lawyers Guild. That's who I would really love us to go under. But they just said that the United Nations is sending in their observers, human rights observers, up at Standing Rock. Well, we are the grassroots granny observers. And we're going to get in there. We're going to make sure that we're on the go, that we're on the ground. So, and then there'll be a place where people can call us, our hotline number, and say, hey, can you come over here? Because I'm watching this, and they're not doing what they said. And we're going to scurry down there. Yes, So you'll see us everywhere.
Oh, that's great. Hey, they're kicking us off the air in 5 seconds.
I have to tell you that.
Hey, thanks a lot, and we'll hear from you again soon. Okay?
Thank you, Susan. We love you.
Love you, Carol. I love you. Love you guys so much.
Good night, everybody. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Lou Otter.
Hi friends, this is Will Bluewater. If you have been listening to our program for long, then you know that Mark the Badger Borcherding does a Mayan birth reading for each of our interview guests. Mark suggested that he give away a free reading for each donation of $20 or more to Prophecy Keepers Radio, a ministry of Oklahoma Native American Church or the White Roots of Peace. So please support Prophecy Keepers Radio by making your free will offering at nativeamericanchurch.us, and you'll receive this gift reading. If you choose to make a recurring donation, once you've received your own reading, you can give readings away as free gifts. So why not head over to nativeamericanchurch.us and make an offering right now. Hope to be talking with you soon. Bye now.
Friends, this is Will Blue Otter encouraging you to obtain an authorized participant or AP card and become a federally recognized Native religious practitioner. Presently, Aklavan Native American Church is the only Native American church spiritually blessed by the Rosebud Reservation Native American Church and has a certificate of existence in the state of Utah that is authorized to worship on or off tribal grounds and has met the standard of sincerity and vow of poverty standards in the state of Utah and federal courts. This card is designed to assist all people regardless of their racial makeup, political affiliation, social and or financial status, and receiving their constitutional rights. This card is also designed to assist United States judicial officials to honor their solemn oath to protect and exercise the principles of the United States Constitution while carrying out their duty and serving their fellow citizens. To join the movement that is strengthening and exercising the principles of the United States Constitution, please obtain your AP card by visiting NativeAmericanChurch.us today.
Dry ground, sagebrush and mesquite and chaparral around, out away is a big dust devil moving on its way. I guess they're never still. In a sacred manner I live, to the heavens I gaze. In a sacred manner I live. My horses are many. The high grass and the cedar, the mighty oak and the tiny flower,